On this episode, we open the door, get on the floor, and review Walking with Dinosaurs. Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
Hey, Dan McCoy. I am Stuart Wellington.
I'm not Elliot Kalin.
Opa!
I'm sorry.
I did not look over take, this third this chair until fart now. Take.
This Elliot Kalin disguise worked all too well. Yep. I waited until after the movie to tell you I'm Kevin Marr.
Yeah. Well, we should.
Hey, Kevin Marr.
Originally, let's be honest here. Originally, this was going to be a four-hander, one of the rare four-hand. Flophouses.
Oh, the rarest of pleasures.
But what happened was Elliot was called away.
This is the TMI portion of the episode.
His child was ill.
Sure.
I don't know whether it's too early to call Sammy the Yoko of the Flophouse.
Oh, wow. Sammy Flophouse ruiner Kalin, yeah.
But the poor child. We feel bad for him. But luckily,
dude, I hope he's okay.
I fucking egg on my face if he's very sick. More than
you're
that.
You're terrible.
Elliot
couldn't be here due to family issues.
Yeah, luckily.
Let's put it that way.
We were already going to have a guest, so it all worked out well. And Kevin.
Yes.
I would say that we know you from your Kevin Geeks Out live show, which all of us have appeared on.
I was on Sharks.
Your Sharks, you did, you've got Jaws.
Yeah, my Jaws, the Nintendo game PowerPoint
thing. Elliot, who's not here, has done his Nuki thing.
Kevin Geeks Out about Aliens.
Many times. And I appeared on your show talking about when
the wrestling
Ron
one, right?
Bashir tweeted at me. But in a larger sense, tell us about yourself. Who are you? Why are you in my apartment?
Why are you looking at us weird?
I'm a writer comedian who fell into that traffic lane of knowing about pop culture and movies and weird science fiction and horror stuff, and then that led to, you know, the more you do it, the more you take on that identity. And
Now you're trapped by
now
it.
Now I'm trapped by it.
It's like wearing too many sweaters.
I always say, like, I was hired by AMC to do a web series about science fiction movies called The Sci-Fi Department. And it was always supposed to be this tongue-in-cheek thing of the, you know, the horror movie shirts I would wear. And I went to Comic-Con in one episode, and it was called the obligatory Comic-Con episode. And I go to the press room, and the room is filled with all these guys who are going to be on camera doing this thing that I'm always kind of like sort of doing a parody of, and I'm surrounded by them. And it was like, oh, God. But now I'm here with them. Yeah. Oh, God, the joke is on me. I've become one of them by doing this kind of thing.
Valuable persona in this internet world. Like,
yeah, with like stuff. Big Bang Theory's huge, bro.
Mm-hmm.
People love that stuff.
Bazinga.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm like a Brooklyn grassroots Big Bang Theory kind of
cool guy.
Comedy, cool guy, cool dad. We'll get to that.
Yeah,
later.
You're a cool dad.
Yeah.
Like a Liam Neeson.
Yeah, did it hurt you inside to make me to hear me make fun of Elliot?
No, what's fascinating is it's great that having a kid you're going to be forced to watch so many horrible movies. Elliot's going to have to see The Smurfs 3. He's going to have to see so many terrible films. And now his son is actually preventing him from watching tonight's movie. So,
which is a movie that you actually saw with your children.
My children demanded we see it.
And which Elliot totally would have like hated, but dug in a weird way because he is the biggest dinosaur.
He loves dinosaurs.
Yeah, we should say what movie we watched tonight. We watched Walking with Dinosaurs.
Walking with all of the dinosaurs.
And there was a lot of walking in this movie, I gotta say.
Yep, there's aptly named.
Probably as much walking as there was dinosaurs. Stuart, you thought, hey, let's get Kevin on this show.
Yeah, well,
explain a little bit.
Kevin saw it with his children, And yeah, then began
about a year ago, a little less than a year ago.
And then you put on some kind of a vigilante garb and began a one-man war through social media against this movie.
Oh, yeah. It was the most traction I've ever gotten. And now I'm being booked on podcasts and being invited on, and it's going to be, that's going to be my parenthetical. Kevin Marr, hater of Walking with Dinosaurs.
Well, though.
Well, you're rebranding yourself at this point.
It's really one of these things. It's such a pleasure for me to finally watch it with other people, because it's the thing, you know, anytime you see something horrible, you can go online and you could say, this is terrible, and all these people can chime in. I know, right? But it was this unique situation that I saw at opening weekend with my kids, and I would talk about it horrible. No one had seen it.
Right. Yeah.
So it was so isolated.
Because we knew.
So I just had to keep putting it out there in the world, and the world responded. And it was one of those things people were so amused by my hatred. They loved seeing me suffer.
I think you tweeted a picture of a guy selling a bootleg copy on the subway, and you were like, "Get away from me."
Yeah, everywhere you look.
Were you worried that it was just is it only my madness? Is it just me? Did you need the confirmation of sharing it with? Did you have to share the disease?
Are you worried that it closed a lot of occupational doors for you? Do you think you lost a lot of opportunities due to your?
It totally has the setup that this guy was up for writing Walking with Dinosaurs. The hashtag sour grapes, but no, I think. I think the reason it hit me so hard was that I've worked in kids' television and kids' movies, and I've done that kind of writing. So I'm seeing structurally so many things that piss me off that I think the casual mom and dad who go to the movie theater, that go to the Court Street UA and have their phones out and they're not really quite
local
paying
Brooklyn
attention.
Reference.
There's a local Brooklyn reference about the bad.
That's the place you go for audience participation. Mm-hmm.
And bed bugs.
And bad bugs.
Yeah.
That I don't think people were as tuned into how horrible it was in all the different ways. Because for me, it's not just the movie itself. It's the cultural forces that made this compromise movie where you're watching the notes. We'll get to that.
You're uniquely prepared to hate this movie.
I didn't go into it knowing the reaction I was going to have, you know?
Sure. Mm-hmm. So, but
you
before
were an
we get
unsuspecting
into the
father who thought, "Hey, I like dinosaurs.
I got a free Saturday afternoon.
Dinosaurs. Let's do this.
Let's get some popcorn.
Some popped corn.
Popcorns. Maybe one of them giant sodas. Watch them. I don't know. You're in Brooklyn,
soda.
So
we
it's like. It's like a bag of granola and I don't know, juice.
Yeah,
whatever kids in Brooklyn drink.
Some kombucha.
Artisanal ginger beer.
Some kind of artisanal child tea.
Mm-hmm. If John Hodgman was here, he would say a moxie, maybe.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But what is this movie? Explain it.
Well, so this movie feels a lot like, I think as you described it, Kevin, it feels like they made this awesome museum movie, like a 3D museum movie with dinosaurs.
Yeah, your best case IMAX film, maybe.
It was based on a British miniseries, which was the most expensive BBC production ever made. That it was this lavish CGI dinosaurs in front of
Perambulations with Dinosaurs.
But they went to the locations. They went to real locations and they filmed it, and then they layered it with dinosaurs,
a shitload of walking dinosaurs,
in the most scientifically accurate, provable
That's
way.
That's why the
that
locations look so nice.
The locations look so nice, and the CGI
they
put a lot of money into it.
You were saying the flames looked sick.
Yeah, pretty good flames. I mean, CGI knows how to do flames.
Yep.
But when it was
Tomb Raider, video games taught me anything.
Yep.
When it was brought to America, they made some changes. They wanted to reach a wider audience.
Mm-hmm. Add a little bit of zazz to it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Zaz was named John Leguizamo. The pest. He was bugging out. And
You got any more in there?
I don't know.
Summer Sam. Yep.
Yeah, that's it.
Perfect.
That's all I got.
Yeah, so this movie stars.
Wait, hold on. Spawn.
It was,
The clown.
The violator in
there.
Yeah,
there you go.
So this movie begins, smash cut. No, wait, that's...
yes, smash cut to the opening of this movie. Smash cut from black to the opening of Walking with Dinosaurs.
We have a really cool Jeep being driven by the world's coolest uncle, Zach, the paleontologist, played by Carl Urban. You might know him as Dredd.
Yeah, or a judge of others. He's almost human. He's not the one who's almost human.
He's not almost human.
I mean, he's got a cyborg leg in that. So he's almost human.
Spoiler alert,
like,
dude.
Most of him is human, and then he's got a cyborg leg.
So when you say he's a paleontologist, I'm thinking he's in some kind of a stiff white lab coat. Yeah. He's got his hair parted down the middle.
Oh, no, my friend.
Poindexter glasses,
yeah,
right?
He's totally some kind of nerd, but
he's
no.
He's sabbatical.
What?
Wait, what? Wait, define that again.
Well, it's a combination. It's a portmanteau. You combine bad and radical.
Okay,
and
but bad isn't good in this
radical.
Case.
Radical. Yeah. The kids use bad to
That's
mean
That's the
good.
Type of thing that the audience for Walking with Dinosaurs yeah. know because they're kids and they're cool.
And it's, you know, they were like, let's get an antediluvian actor to do this. Let's get somebody from down under.
Sure.
But
he does a passable American accent.
Sam Neill.
Okay.
From Jurassic Park. You know, like, he's the Jurassic Park Sam Neill stand-in, Carl Urban.
Okay. I mean, that's he does say. A passable American. Like,
yeah,
he was
sure.
a good Bones. Not from the show Bones. From
no. A good... Not, what's it? What's, Elizabeth Deschanel?
Yeah, no, he doesn't do that. No, from Star Trek. But
Sure.
So, yeah, so he's the cool uncle. He's taking his, sour teenage nephew and very enthusiastic... teenage niece.
Mm-hmm. And we know he's sour because he's got the hood up on his hoodie.
Okay.
And he's not looking up from his mobile device.
Yep. Screens.
Mm-hmm.
That's shorthand for teenager, I guess, at this point.
That's how you know.
Yeah, and he looks like a, I don't know, from the 90s goth guy.
Yeah, he's got his hair combed forward. Mm-hmm. He's got a lot of eyebrows, I think. I don't
he's
remember.
He's got more than the usual number of eyebrows. He's got like 8 eyebrows.
So this teenage kid, he is uninterested in checking out dinosaurs. He's way too old for that. He wants to, I don't know, play Mario Kart? What do they do on these things?
He's sexting. He's busy. He's Snapchatting.
He's playing Nudie Touch or whatever kids play. What's that thing? So he is unimpressed by this dinosaur tooth that his uncle shows him.
Mm-hmm.
His uncle goes off to look.
Now, is this dinosaur tooth a spear tooth? Is that?
No, that's a mammal, dude. The spear tooth is a saber tooth type.
Manix.
No, that's also a mammal.
Okay.
So he's
unimpressed. 2000
BC. Yep, that was a movie we watched. So Carl Urban, the paleontologist Zach, heads off to go check out. Whatever, digging a hole or something. Mm-hmm. And the teenager hangs out by himself, totally disinterested, until...
But wait, before we get to that, the uncle is clearly, they're gonna go on a long hike, and then they're going to do a dig, and he says, all right, you can just hang out here in front of the Jeep. He's just going to abandon him in the woods.
I think he was expecting him
he
to chase
him,
after... Yeah, he was...
I mean, as a non-father,
yeah.
Unlike you or Elliot, like, I feel like, as an uncle... I would do that. I'd be like, all right, you're not coming with me? Stay here with the car. Forge for yourself.
I don't think Zach is used to people not being interested in hanging out with
yeah,
him.
Yeah, man. He's got a sweet life, Zach does. but he leaves.
And then a bird shows up.
Do you think Zach normally takes the ladies out there? That's why it's a, well, he knows the path.
Yeah,
to the dig.
Yeah, and then
well,
he
because he's taking his chicks out.
Yeah, the night before he covers up the dinosaur bones, and then when they show up, he's like, "Oh my god, we just found this! Awesome! Oh, and the tooth matches. Perfect." Spoiler alert:
we should probably have sex on top of these bones.
Sure.
And she says, "There's one more bone I'd like to see."
Yep, one more dinosaur I'd like to walk with.
Everybody walk the dinosaur. That's what he says.
Okay, so a bird shows up and just starts talking to this kid. He does it, I'm guessing, telepathically because he doesn't really move his mouth that much.
Yeah.
That bird, played by John Leguizamo.
It's more of a Marmaduke did that, right? Where the mouth didn't move? Or did
no,
they,
they use CGI for the mouth.
Okay. So it's more of an old-time...
Or maybe not. I don't remember Marmaduke that well.
Okay. I feel like it's like an old time Disney movie situation where the mouth didn't move, not a new time.
Or they put like they put peanut butter in the horse's mouth, and you get a good lip flap going.
They did not put peanut butter in the fake raven's mouth.
Yeah, we just smeared some CGI peanut butter in his CGI mouth.
But this bird apparently. But
the reason is that it was made as a silent movie, and it was after the fact that they're like,
not the whole thing. I imagine the opening was
The opening was.
It was all pantomime.
One more thing that was designed to get people excited for this. For this experience.
Yeah, in a larger sense. Before we go on, like in a larger sense,
we are like 2 seconds into this movie.
This is a movie that was. A educational film that was not that did not have words.
And don't worry, it's still pretty educational.
Maybe it had narration, but it did not have characters saying things, which is all that the rest of the movie has.
Yeah, it feels like somebody took a animated movie about dinosaurs and then they had like Bob Saget from America's Funniest Home Videos do voices for everybody.
Yeah.
But not as funny.
Yeah. Right. They're doing everything that everyone's saying like Garfield style with like word balloons.
Sure.
Like thought balloons, but you hear what they're thinking.
But you can't introduce any new information because if a character is on screen for 2.5 seconds, you just have to say like, oh, I'm scared. Mm-hmm. Where it's just bringing the subtext to the surface. It's like what you already know is being said out loud for
everything
you in funny character voices.
That's clear by their...
There was quotes around funny there, by the way, listeners at home.
But what I before we pass this...
So, of course, this raven catches this kid's attention because his raven is speaking to his mind.
Yeah. But before we pass over, like, this raven...
That's one way to take a teenager out of their screen for a second. Am I right, parents?
Yeah, to have a fucking raven talk to them.
Yep, he's like, are you a portent of my death?
God, don't do drugs! God!
All right. I... Yes.
Whatever,
God,
man.
Don't text and drive. God.
Don't tell me what to do, Raven. You're not my dad. The weird thing to me about this whole like framing device of this movie is the idea that this bird thinks that this teenager really needs to learn a lesson about dinosaurs. like this bird is like pulling a fucking like Christmas carol, like, oh, like your life is going to go off the rails if you don't learn a lesson about how important dinosaurs are.
Yeah, you've seen a flash forward. I mean, this bird has existed through all of time, as we're going to learn.
Well, it's his ancestors. He morphs into his own, he goes from being a standard black crow, he morphs into his prehistoric ancestor.
Earlier bird.
Yeah.
But like, the weird thing about that, too, though, is like, you know, like scientists pretty much agree that like modern birds are the ancestors of dinosaurs. But it's not a case in this case where like this bird morphs back into a dinosaur from the past. The bird just morphs into a different, more colorful bird.
A bird with a unibrow.
Yeah.
That's always code name for a caveman type.
he morphs into a bird with teeth. He retains everything about his sassiness.
Yeah, he's got his Latin John Leguizamo accent.
Exactly.
Because I guess he's his, I don't know.
So this bird that has existed through all times,
sure,
beginning and end till the world is destroyed, I'm assuming. He, I guess, takes this kid on a mind journey. I don't know what happens. All of a sudden, we're in the past. It doesn't tell us how far. He just flies through the air, and then all of a sudden there's dinosaurs all over the place. We're assuming the kid's following along and not just looking at his phone again.
That would have been a great twist ending that at the end, the bird finishes a dramatic tale to emphasize how insignificant we all are in the giant... endless quilt of history.
And the kids. Yep, and his best Rust Cole impression.
And the kids.
The little spots of
the
light in the darkness.
The kids playing Bubble Bobble.
Sure. Well, you can get that on an iPhone now? Wow,
I would love Bubble Bobble on iPhone.
Oh, it's wishful thinking.
Oh. And before this happens, I think the catalyst here is the kid picks up that dinosaur tooth and it starts to glow like through the cracks in the tooth, like there's magic inside. Now we're in the past, okay? Maybe that's like a magic tooth. We'll find out later. So we go to the past. We're introduced to... what type of fucking dinosaur are they?
I don't know.
Didn't one of you guys have the...
Pachyrhinosaurus.
Pachyrhinosauruses that look like triceratops without all the horns.
Yeah, they're triceratops without horns, bigger noses.
They're not your daddy's Triceratops.
Yeah.
And we're introduced to a baby, the runt of the litter, Patchy? Packy? What's his name?
Patchy.
Patchy.
Packy is offensive. Patchy.
Patchy, not offensive.
Yeah.
So Patchy, named, I'm guessing after his species, is played by Justin Long. He's the runt of the litter, and he gets into some adventures right away. He doesn't get any of his mom's vomit food. He gets attacked by another dinosaur that is described to us by a disembodied little girl voice.
Yeah, this is some, whenever a new dinosaur appears on the screen, there's a freeze frame. The Latin name of the dinosaur comes up. Little girl says what the dinosaur is. And this is like the vestigial like tale of the educational part of this movie. Like
it's the webbing between the fingers.
Yeah, it's the one part that's just like, hey, maybe you want to know what these dinosaurs actually were before we anthropomorphize them into, like, they might as well be in Madagascar animated film, you know?
You are doing a disservice to Madagascar right now.
I think that I probably would have enjoyed watching Madagascar more than...
It's what I imagine those direct-to-DVD Madagascar copycat films are like, you know?
What would they call Tasmania? No, I guess that's actually a thing.
Murdergascar.
Nope, that's the horror movie.
One of you killed zebra. Which one?
Welcome to my dinner party. One of you lemurs is about to die. You've just ingested poison. So some fucking other dinosaur attacks Patchy and gives him his trademark hole in his frill. And he's got the little frill like a Triceratops, puts a hole in it. Now we can identify him from all the other dinosaurs that look
like,
the same.
Like Portlandia? Huh? Put a hole on it? You know what I'm talking about. Put a hole on it. Take a drink of your beer. Yeah.
And what was there the line we were laughing at? Like, nice hole or something?
There are many like, hole jokes.
It was something like, put something in my hole. Or something. It was just like... That's weird. That's a weirdly sexual thing.
I think it was later on when Justin Long's character, Patchy, meets Juniper, the love of his life, who is also a dinosaur. And he says, she likes me and she likes my hole.
Yeah, that's right.
That goes on the DVD box. So there's a bunch of... We get introduced to this this tribe of dinosaurs.
It establishes the world of the dinosaurs.
Okay, that's
you know,
fair.
We see there's no people walking around. Mm-hmm. There's only CGI dinosaurs.
No one walking with the dinosaurs. The dinosaurs are
walking
with
each other. Yeah,
they're learning to eat. There's a lot of poop jokes up top.
Poop and barf jokes, right? Yeah, to make sure the kids are interested.
Yeah, Patchy gets pooped on by a much larger dinosaur, and they get a lot of jokes out of that.
Yeah. I'm sure you saw this in a theater full of. I'm assuming very excited children, and they were
not
totally into it.
What would they have been more excited to see? Was there something else out at the same time?
Yeah, do you think
maybe they were like keener on?
No,
but their parents were like, "This is educational. We're going to take you to."
But it's educational. We're saying it's like it's educational. As like the healthy choice, the way McDonald's would give you apple slices,
sure.
Where it really, this is not the place to go for healthy options and educational. It's like apple slices covered with caramel and hot fudge.
Yeah.
And a kid gets to say, well, this is the healthy choice. Any, whatever.
Vitamin water. Like, it's just sugar water.
Yeah.
But they've
sugar's a vitamin, bro.
Vitamins in there.
But at the same time, it's like, no, this is a hip, cool movie with a lot of wisecracking dinosaurs.
John Leguizamo.
And a
kids
soundtrack
love
that
guy.
The adults are going to get into.
That's true.
We'll get into that later.
Rock soundtrack.
So we're introduced to our hero, Patchy. His brother, who's like big and tough but not very smart, Skyler was his name.
Scowler.
Wait, that was his brother.
Yeah. Who do you think? Like, you thought he was his best friend or something?
I just
thought he was another dinosaur.
Dinosaur. I didn't know that there was an intro. Like,
it's the classic jerk older brother. You know the movie.
Yeah, exactly. The
movie
bit,
is
wait,
drawing
no,
upon a lot of a lot of good like kids movie archetypes.
Buzz from Home Alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
Bill Paxton from Weird Science.
Sure.
Similar
ending. Because he does tell the female dinosaur he'd like to butter her muffins.
We're jumping ahead because there is a female dinosaur, the love interest, Juniper. Mm-hmm.
Named after the berries.
Yep, after the, I guess, the thing they eat.
I guess.
Yep. Yeah. We'll get to eating that dinosaur later. He falls in love with her. Patchy, that is. Then they go on a big migration. She can't be with Patchy because she's part of a different tribe. Classic story. Mm-hmm. Capulets and Romulans or whatever.
Romeo and Patchy story.
Up world, down world.
Sure, yeah. Yep. And they go on. They have to go south because shit's getting cold. And then somewhere in the process, there's a big storm. The forest catches on fire from lightning.
Yeah, it's a real Bambi situation.
Yep.
They got to run out of the fiery forest.
Mm-hmm. But the fire was caused by a bunch of Tyrannosaurus Rexes or something?
No, it was lightning.
Okay.
Lightning that struck the ground.
Okay.
I was wondering how the T-Rex started the fire. They're just
so,
smoking.
Yep.
The balloon filled with kerosene and a time-released alarm clock.
Yeah.
So the fire begins. Our hero and his family get separated. The hero's father saves his life, only to be murdered by a dinosaur.
Because Patchy and his brother's dad, they had the dinosaur who was the leader of their tribe. He was like the head guy of their pack.
He even had a name, though I don't remember what it was. And he totally got murdered in front of their eyes, which, you know, that's traumatizing, but it's also character building.
But John Leguizamo sets you up in the narration. He says, every story always has a scary part. Now it's time for the scary part. You know, there are trigger warnings
for
children who've survived forest fires.
Sure. You can send your child out into the lobby where they can not have to witness this.
Where they can get kidnapped. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
That's the scary
totally
part.
Totally
cool. So after this, it turns out that Juniper's father the two tribes marry into
they
each other,
a
right?
Little. They come out they of the mingle. Ashes and meet up with Juniper.
And Juniper's father, I don't know, Slammo, what's his name? Dragonface?
yeah. Awesome sauce.
He takes charge of the tribe. Man, this is where it's going to get rough. They start wandering around. We're introduced to the villains of the movie at this point. Which
this
is a
movie.
Gorgazor, Gorgazons.
this film was so
a giant
low
blue
on
dinosaur.
Plot.
It's
it was
hard,
kind of hard.
It's
to
really
focus
hard
on
to do the plot summary because we could breeze right through it, and it seems like there nothing happened. But for us, it was just
it's like a mumblecore
time
movie.
Slowing down.
We were walking with those.
It's
dinosaurs.
A mumblesore movie.
All right, I don't.
Elliot's not here. I got to make that kind of joke.
Yeah,
the Duplosasauruses were really good in this.
So, you got one?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, so then we're introduced to the villains of the movie. They look like Tyrannosaurus Rexes, but they're called Gorgazors. One of them's blue. He's, I guess, the big bad.
Yeah.
He's like the white orc from the Hobbit movies.
Yep.
And
it's just necessary.
He and the other carnivores chase the tribe of dinosaurs into up against the river.
Mm-hmm.
And then the baby dinosaurs fall into the river. That includes our hero, Patchy, Juniper, and his brother, Skylar. They go floating down the river for a while.
In an exciting scene where, you know, you're getting CGI water on the camera's lens.
You're getting CGI water on the camera lens. We get some rewind and fast
jokes
forward
about whether Patchy intentionally dove into the river or just fell.
This is coming hot on the heels of some hilarious jokes about how the bad guy dinosaur has tiny ineffectual arms.
Now you got to understand, like, this whole movie, if you've read, like, I think it was Patton Oswalt, like, wrote about how, like, he, as a stand-up comic, was paid to come in on an animated movie to just, like, come up with ADR gags.
Yeah,
like
punch up the script.
Yeah, punch up the script. Like they've already done the animation, so, like, maybe, like, something that someone can yell from off-screen. That would be funny. And it's, like, the whole movie is that. This whole movie is that. Like, they were like, oh, it doesn't matter whether anyone's talking at the time.
And you could, you just, even if you come up with a sensible, good character-driven bit,
yeah.
It's like, well, the character only appears on screen for, you know, 3 seconds, so the joke has to fit for the 3 seconds that we see the bird or whoever.
So you got to make that just, short and sweet.
Which means in order to go for those jokes, they're kind of like throwing any kind of continuity out the window where Patchy compares himself to a ninja.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is ridiculous.
they refer to future events that the dinosaurs couldn't possibly know about. They acknowledge that they're telling a story in a movie. I mean, the whole thing, it just... And it's
Dan's favorite gag when the mammal shows up on screen and the dinosaurs... are happy to know that mammal will become extinct someday, whereas we, the audience, know that it's not the case.
Yeah, any gag that relies on the irony of a person in the past saying something about the future that we, in the future, know not to be true is always hilarious.
But it's weirdly the difference that in some kind of like early 90s gag, you'd have, I just got this new CD by Milli Vanilli. These guys really are the real deal. You know, then you get the joke that, oh.
And I'm like, why is this cabbie telling me this story?
I mean, I don't understand the comparison you're making, because that joke is awesome.
The difference being one character being embarrassed by the Milli Vanilli reveal compared to an entire species dying and becoming extinct. Sure. But the hero of your movie, the hero of your kid's movie, is making a joke not realizing he's going to die and everything like him is going to die.
My actions are meaningless, for everything I do is ineffectual. Yeah. We are all dead in the end. Nothing but dust.
I look into the eyes of the dinosaurs and I see nothing. I see nothing but
I think we can all agree.
Desire for food.
I think the entire time, I think we were hoping that John Leguizamo had been replaced with Werner Herzog, right before the end.
Yeah.
I hope the DVD has, like, audio options.
That would be like, honestly.
I would buy that.
If that was the solution they came up with, rather than having John Leguizamo, they were like, we don't need to hire John Leguizamo. We don't need to hire Justin Long. We don't need to hire all these other no name people that we rounded up the cast with. Just get Werner Herzog to come in
and do a shitload of voices.
Yeah.
Play all the characters.
He's a real Michael Winslow. Sound effects.
Cute little dinosaur. Oh no, I've fallen into the river. This is terrible for me.
She likes me and she likes my horn.
She likes the hole in my horn, which matches the hole in my heart.
So, where were we at?
I don't know.
I think
they're in the river now. They climb
out
of the river.
A little girl's voiceover identified a dinosaur during a freeze frame.
Sure.
And back to the plot.
Our heroes are out of the river. They wander around in the woods for a little while. I think they beat up on some smaller dinosaurs. Then they reach the coast, where they are introduced to some giant dinosaurs. They're very hungry.
Mm-hmm.
This is where the giant dinosaurs walk up, and they play Fleetwood Mac's Tusk.
Yeah, which is probably my favorite part of the
I think
the
Dan got up and did a little dance.
I'm like, I like this song, Tusk. I can get behind that.
So I guess they meet up with the rest of their tribe. I don't remember what happens.
Yeah, the movie jumps forward.
Yeah, and that's when we do a big jump forward where we...
Rat style.
Yeah, except they don't tell us how... They don't really tell us how far.
Guys, let's...
Rat style.
Let's track the character arcs here. Patchy and Juniper are kind of... they're becoming a little more than friends.
Mm-hmm.
She's really warming up to him. They're surviving together. His big brother took off. Abandoned them, left them, and returned to the tribe. So the two of them were on their own, and I think it brought them a little bit closer.
Juniper is not a girl, not yet a woman. I know that's true.
Yeah, but, you know, he's kind of in the friend zone, but at some point, he's hoping that he'll be able to, I don't know, do with her? What do they do? Like, do they mate? Do they become mate for life? How do dinosaurs do it, Dan?
I don't know, like a humping?
No, I don't need to know that, but like, do they get married? Are they monogamous?
Dinosaurs got married, and it was a beautiful ceremony. They've got flower pterodons come by and drop flowers from the sky. You got a best raptor.
Best for after.
Fucking no.
You have that on the groom side and then yeah. The bride side.
Depends.
Sure. A Brontosaurus wedding planner voiced by Jennifer Lopez. Yeah, sure. For the adults.
That's great.
Traditional dinosaur wedding. That's how it worked.
Some kind of a dinosaur rabbi character. Mm-hmm. Perform
they
the
step
ceremony.
On the coconut.
Sure. Yeah. They step on a coconut. Okay. Fast forward. We have older dinosaurs. They look basically the same, but I guess they're bigger. This is where we're introduced to the challenge for dominance between two males, mm-hmm. which involves ramming each other's heads together until one gives up and the other one's the leader. Skylar takes over the tribe after a bunch of headbutts, and then I guess that means that Juniper is his girlfriend now.
He defeats yeah. Juniper's dad.
No, I don't.
Yeah,
and I mean, she really has no reaction to that.
They're
that,
totally that together
her dad
for a while.
Was just defeated by her best friend's big brother.
And then he basically exits the movie.
No. He's there for a while. This is dinosaur law, though. Like, the toughest dinosaur gets the lady.
Yeah.
And so we can only assume that, like, Scowler and Juniper are, like, doing it for a while. Am I right, guys? You gotta...
Yeah, I mean, there's probably pictures on the internet somewhere of that. Yeah. Go to DeviantArt.
I gotta say, like, Scowler was kind of my favorite character in the movie because
at that
he
point,
takes over
you got...
the movie for a while. And he is like such a poochy character.
Yeah, very really, like a tin pot dictator of a dinosaur.
Totally radical. He's like a radical dude. But you know, we're supposed to.
No, but I like that we
but
earlier
I
in the movie
like just because he has like an attitude. At least he has some personality.
So earlier in the movie, our hero Panchi and his brother witness their father, after saving their life, get devoured by a dinosaur.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, Juniper's father gets defeated in a challenge for dominance, and then that character disappears. We don't see that character, her dad, ever again, nor does she mention
shamed.
Him. Yeah, after that point, she doesn't care anymore.
Yeah, he goes off to die in the dinosaur graveyard.
Which is the entire world, apparently.
Yeah. But up until that point, she was Juniper.
For Carl Urban to find and then use as a means to boning ladies, I guess, and impressing nephews.
But that, I mean, like, Scowler takes over for a while, and then...
Mm-hmm. That's when the movie gets a little exciting. We got, a lot of it is them walking back, like, north to south, or south
migrate.
To north.
Because they have to do the migration, so it gives you a natural plot device.
Exactly. And at one point, Skylar leads them in the wrong direction. They go over a frozen lake.
You keep saying Skylar like it's fucking Walter White's wife from Breaking Bad.
You bring
cleverly named.
I think it's
Scowler.
He's
a bad guy because his name's Scowler.
It's very
Dickensian.
What you wish to my jokes.
Scowl.
Now, which came first, the name Scowler or the scowl?
I don't
sure,
know.
Yeah. They're damning him by naming him
you
Scowler.
Really are.
Just like by naming Panchi after their
sure.
entire race, of course he's going to be the hero of the story.
I'm sure.
Well, I always find that strange in any kind of kids thing. It's always like, oh, my name's Joe Gorilla. This is my mom, Mrs. Gorilla. It's like everyone just had your last name. But like, then how do you distinguish yourselves from the thousands of other people in your
How does Joe
all?
Gorilla distinguish himself?
I don't know.
Well, this is
he the smartest
he wears,
gorilla in the tribe?
He wears a baseball cap backwards.
By the way,
of course.
Like,
he rides a... A razor scooter.
Okay. Does he save them from poachers or?
Oh, I don't
know. We're writing the story now.
Yeah. This is reminiscent of something that I asked Elliot recently. I came into work. I'm like, something just occurred to me about Star Wars. So Jabba the Hutt. Hutt is the type of creature he is because
Chewbacca
there are other
the
there are other Hutts.
Yeah.
So like that would be like me being like, my name is Dan the Human.
Yeah.
What kind of fucking naming convention is that?
It's terrible.
It seems a little weird.
It's as though it's introducing your name for a third party to like, witness your adventures who's never
I would say
your type
you're not
before.
Familiar with my race. My name is Jabba the Hutt. Is that your actual name? Let's just say it is.
I mean, I'm assuming it's like a Jimmy the Greek sort of thing, though.
That's what Elliot said, but like...
We are.
There are other huts.
The same.
There are other huts. Who,
yeah, I don't think other huts
in,
call
like,
them that.
Are there?
There are other huts out there who are not like in like the organized crime game.
Isn't there
I think everyone. Do we ever see other?
I think
huts?
In one of the Clone Wars, that Clone Wars movie, there's one with like a bunch of makeup on.
Yeah, I mean, like
this listeners, write in to tell Kevin
I don't know about the expanded universe here. I'm just saying
I don't know if it's, that's expanded. I mean, I think it's canon if it's in a it's a movie. It's just animated. It's not like fucking Timothy Zahn wrote it.
It just seems weird. It seems like a weird way to like introduce yourself to anybody.
But it's Chewbacca the Wookiee, and we know there's a whole race of Wookiees, and they have a planet.
Yeah,
he's not like
Kashyyyk is filled with them.
Pardon me,
shooting
I'm
up
Chewbacca
bowcasters in the air.
For all we know, that's what those sounds mean.
Okay, I don't think that's a fair way of.
I think it would.
For
be,
all we
I think
know,
it would
we have a solid defense
was,
against
if this. It was Chewbacca T Wookiee, the classic middle initial, Jabba T Hutt,
while E Coyote. Anyway, let's get back
What's
to dinosaurs.
What's E stand for?
Excellent. He's an excellent coyote.
Not based on performance.
But he can talk sometimes.
It's true.
Depending on the cartoon.
That's actually pretty excellent. And he can order things. I mean, he's got a job.
He's good at filling out magazine forms. Nice. A catalog.
It's all mail fraud. That's his real skill.
That, I guess that's excellent. He should stick to that, though. He should stop trying to kill that roadrunner. So
let's skip to the end.
Okay, so Patchy and Skylar are getting a couple fights. Skylar takes over the tribe again. Patchy almost gets eaten by a bunch of scavengers. He realizes that he's in love with Juniper, and she gives him the power love, which allows him to defeat scavengers.
Because at one point he's in a fight where Skylar knocks a tree down, and when Patchy falls into a ditch, the tree kind of goes over his neck,
trapping him.
There is no way out. He is stuck there. His brother leaves him there to die.
It's like when you get caught in like the guillotine or Brutus the Barber Beefcake's headlock.
Right. But a log that's never going to get tired. And in all of this, Juniper's always like, sorry, it's the rules. So it's like on the one hand, you have the idea that Patchy is all about the true love that empowers him to do whatever he needs to do. And she's like, look, man, let's not rock the boat.
What are you, a fucking robot, Juniper?
Look, they're like.
She's like the sign says, two men in or one man leaves.
Yep. That's the way dinosaurs.
Them's the brakes. Bust the deal. Spin the wheel. Come on, Patchy. Mm-hmm.
When you walk with dinosaurs, you know the deal.
Yeah. So Patchy then. He rejoins the tribe.
Well, he gets superpowers of love because the bird gives him a flashback to his own father's death, and he says, Patchy, your father died for something. Mm-hmm. If you're going to die, let your death have meaning, which gives him the power to get out from under the log, race by all the previous bullies, not unlike Jody at the end of Phantasm encountering the bug and the lady in lavender and all the characters he's met along the way, that Patchy now has the confidence to run right by with just enough screen time to get a quick stand-up comic, write a line
listening.
In there. Out of my way! Move it, jerks! Yeah. Stuff like that.
In a way, he's become the thing he hates, a bully.
he really
he's
is.
He's pulling those trees.
What I like is that flashback reminded him that love, he's in love with Juniper, and that gives him the strength, and it's not just the adrenaline of possibly getting eaten to death by a bunch of scavengers.
Yeah.
I also like the subtext is like, your father died protecting you. He died for a reason. Unlike your mom, who just plain died.
Well, wait, do we find out what happens to his mom? Does she die? She gets baked alive?
They never give it a moment's notice. They never give it any attention or any emotion.
One of the great travesties of this movie, the great crimes the screenwriter perpetrated, is by not telling us what happens to Dino
Mom.
Shame
that this movie does not pass the Bechdel test. Walking with Dinosaurs.
Wait, you're right. It does not. Wait, that's a bit.
Yeah. So anyway, the point is, love conquers all, et cetera.
No, I mean, the point is, then he meets up with Juniper. He's about to tell her that he loves her.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess she'll be into it. I don't know. She's kind of a stickler for the rules.
Irrelevant. Doesn't matter. The girl's feelings, not important. It's all about his journey and his quest and his ability to articulate how he feels about the girl.
Exactly. Dino law dictates.
He's a runt no more.
Yeah.
So we right then the herd gets attacked by that same fucking blue asshole and his other Gorgazors.
With their dino swords.
First off, you're referencing the property Dino Swords that I've been working on, featuring robot cowboys dueling in the future using dinosaur swords, led by, of course, the hero, Dusty Sprockets.
I apologize.
So
my patent infringement.
Yeah.
copyright.
Yeah, exactly. It's copywritten. We've talked about you using this patent troll character. I'd rather he not show up again. Sorry, I got really excited about dinosaurs.
The point is, everything turns out fine for our hero.
But given the choice between leaving Scowler to die so he can lead the tribe himself and go off with the woman of his dreams.
Dinosaur.
Dinosaur woman of his dreams. He does decide to stay and defend his brother, who's been just an asshole throughout the whole movie, who's left him to die multiple times.
I mean, the only thing his brother's done is he has sacrificed himself for the tribe, which is what any good leader should do.
Right, right.
Yeah. But Patchy says, turn that scowl upside down.
Patchy's like, I could leave you to die, but I'd rather you live forever in shame as I am now going to defeat this guy and become the leader of the tribe and be with your girl again.
But they're all happy together. And then we flash forward back to the future where, the teenager's like, I was wrong. Dinosaurs are awesome. I've learned my lesson.
He's like, the best part about Patchy is that he and everybody he knows is dead.
I've learned my lesson based on this one anthropomorphized dinosaur that I guess really existed in the past. And his John Leguizamo magic bird friend.
And he realizes that the tooth he holds is one of the tooth of that blue asswipe who got his fucking teeth knocked out by Patchy's forehead. Because he matches that broken tooth up to a jawbone that...
It's the missing piece.
...that paleontologist Zach has unearthed to show off in front of his kids. probably unearthed for the first time, I'm sure. And then John Leguizamo says some more fucking jokes, flies away, then disappears because his work is done.
Yeah.
Like he's some kind of magic ghost.
And then a dinosaur bursts through the screen, which probably was pretty awesome when it's done in 3D.
This whole thing was in 3D.
I mean, if you're going to end the movie anyway, end it with a dinosaur bursting through the screen.
Sure, I'm going to argue with anything in this movie, that's going to be the last thing. But, we've talked a long time. We should move straight to final judgments, whether this was a good, bad movie,
I think
movie,
I know what it's going to be.
Or a movie you kind of liked.
Dan?
I'll start. I feel like, look, if I had kids, and I don't, but if I did, I wouldn't necessarily hate this compared to the other shit that kids could be watching, because I've seen some of the terrible shit that kids can be watching. However...
Yeah, two girls, one cup, etc.
Yeah, the animated children's version of Two Girls, One Cup. But this, as an adult, this infuriates me. This weird hybrid of supposed edutainment and just total bullshit nonsense, bad sub Shrek level reference comedy. Yeah, I did not like this movie at all. It's a bad, bad movie. Wonder you can go.
Yeah, so it was a bad, bad movie. It was so clearly that they added the dialogue afterwards. You don't even see any dinosaur lips moving, and they don't make any effort to add any distance to the vocals. So you don't know there's no levels to the sound. So it just sounds like a bunch of voices are yelling in your ear. The only time they modulate the sound is when the giant dinosaurs are walking past and the Fleetwood Mac song fades out into the distance along with them, like they're carrying a boombox.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a bad, bad movie. I guess it's a good punishment movie if you want to punish your kids.
I don't know the kids would see it as punishment. My kids didn't find it to be punishment. They seem to enjoy themselves on some level.
Okay.
For me, it was exactly to your point, Dan, that it tries to get the best of both worlds by being this sort of like in the spirit of a DreamWorks comedy. It's got all these elements, and I think it does not succeed on that level. It also tries to give you a little bit of science along the way. You know, you'll learn a few things, but
sure,
not
a little bit
enough
of apple in the middle
to
of the caramel.
Actually, get a preschool college credit or what have you to actually, you know, have any real takeaway. So it's worse than so many things I've seen, because it's like even if you see some horrible Christmas special, it's like, oh well, that simply was not doing one thing, and that was not entertaining. This was not doing multiple things at once. I thought it was incredibly condescending. I just, it's one of the most it just makes me so angry.
So it'd be if you want to punish an adult, you
can
show them this movie.
Yes.
Which we just made you do a second time.
Yeah. Thanks.
But moving on.
So the next segment is
letters
from
listeners. Thanks.
Wait,
Stuart.
Is there a song?
No, there's no song because Elliot's not here. So
do you want to call him? Do you want to do a dial in?
Probably could do it over the phone, but I don't.
But then we'd have to pause. Oh, yeah.
We have to learn. We'd have to listen to the call. That's the problem. We'd have to actually listen.
Yeah,
to the
we'd
song.
Have to listen to that. We just talk for
let's
a while.
Move on. Let's pretend that there was a song here.
Yeah, just plug in.
Listeners.
Just turn on your iPad, iPod, and play a letter song.
Guys, pause the tape right now. It's a tape, right?
Yep.
Pause it and make up your own letter song, and then imagine that I'm sighing while that letter song.
What you should
is
do is record
on.
It and then email it to Elliot because he loves letter songs.
He loves them so much. But the first letter goes like this: I recently attended a screening of the 1983 version of La Traviata. It was pretty good. If nothing else, it at least makes you appreciate why Placido Domingo became a megastar. But ultimately, it is too flawed to be considered truly great. This experience got me thinking that, as far as I know, no really good opera movies have ever been made. Zeffirelli made some nice tries, Bergman's version of The Magic Flute is as good an attempt as I can think of, and Kenneth Branagh's version of the same play and Caspar Holten's version of Don Giovanni are decent attempts from recent years, but none of them can be said to be really good movies, and of course there are all the ones that are just plain bad. Can you guys think of another type of movie which has been attempted frequently but has never been done just right? Martin, last name withheld. P.S. In case you're wondering which character each of you are in my non-existing Flophouse opera crossover fanfiction, Elliot is Figaro from the Barber of Seville, always making jokes and getting into trouble. Stu is Don Giovanni, obviously, popular with ladies and always hanging out with supernatural creatures. And Dan is Siegfried, pervy but ultimately a good guy. I just realized in reading this that I selected all of these letters, not realizing that Elliot would not be here, because Elliot is the guy who is an actual opera aficionado. He goes to the opera.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So the three of us are not opera aficionados.
Well, I'm not. Well, I don't know anything.
I know
about
a few
Kevin.
Rock operas
yeah.
that have been.
And have they been translated to the screen properly?
Yeah, I don't know if it's properly. I think Tommy is a little garish.
Sure.
I think of Phantom of the Paradise.
Phantom of the Paradise, yeah. The opera within the opera in some of these, within Amadeus, sure. But
no,
that
but,
was not built for film.
No, but in a larger sense, I guess the question is really like, is there a genre or a type of movie that has been tried?
Well, I think what we have to pay
successful.
Attention to is that the opera already existed in a previous medium, so it's an adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
I know the trading card genre has been attempted a couple of times with the Garbage Pail Kids and
Mars Attacks.
Haven't gotten Dinosaurs Attacks. Clue is a board game turned to movie.
I'm gonna argue.
But I thought that was great.
It's great. But I'm just trying to think of other adaptations.
Well, I think video game movies is probably your best.
That's probably.
But the closest being, shit, I don't know.
Super Mario Brothers.
Super
Mario Brothers. Probably the finest of the.
That Legend of Zelda movie they came out with, right?
Mm-hmm.
That
Qbert film.
That
pretty good.
I remember when they were pitching that Doom movie, and they're like, "Oh, there's this great section of first person shooterness, also
right.
featuring." Carl Urban. Not a good movie.
No.
Big surprise.
Turns out that it's not actually exciting just to see someone's hands in front of them with a gun walking around corners.
Yeah, not as exciting as when you're not controlling anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think that people should have been able to realize that that's not exciting from the experience of watching another person play a first-person shooter, which is a common experience.
Yeah.
The experience of that is usually like, okay, could you give me the controller now? Could I could I get in on this?
No. You're going to fuck up my save file.
But could I just, all right.
No, just let me show you how to kill this abobo or whatever.
But moving on, this next letter is titled the Crypt Keeper's Genitals. Dear Flophouse, I was recently catching up on some old episodes and came across a discrepancy that demands exploration and potentially Stuart's immediate termination with prejudice.
With prejudice, okay.
During the Dreamhouse episode from 2012, during a discussion of the Crypt Keeper's privates, Stuart rather definitively stated that the Crypt Keeper's genitalia was perfectly preserved and looked like, quote, a begging strip that you give your dog. Further discussion was short-circuited by Mr. McCoy giggling like a schoolgirl for 38 uninterrupted minutes. Less than a year later, discussion again turned to this vital question of science. During the letter section of Attack of the Clones, a Scandinavian listener asked Stuart to describe a wormy boner. Stuart responded that a wormy boner is a curlicue like a pig's tail, then claimed that the Crypt Keeper had a wormy boner. Unless the Crypt Keeper's flaccid, preserved penis transforms into a curlicue when he becomes aroused, this makes no sense.
Dead to rights.
Please clarify. Dan, last name withheld, not McCoy.
Oh, wow, Dan, you got me.
There's more than one version of the Crypt Keeper. There's the comic book. There's the HBO series. There's the animated series.
Kevin is my representation here, I guess.
But I also don't understand. I mean, like, the first time, you don't state.
I mean, I think curly.
It could have been a flaccid penis we were talking about earlier. And when the boner.
When it gets,
boner style, it could spin around. Like, yeah, when it gets you up.
I mean, I don't think it spins around. It turns into, like, a corkscrew.
Yeah. I'm not saying like there's a fucking breakdance, like the boner.
Yeah, like a pinwheel or something.
Puts down some cardboard.
You're like a guy wearing a bow tie who gets sexually turned on.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I think you got me. I was probably wrong. I think the real answer is it looks like a bully stick that you feed your dog, which is a dried bull's penis. That looks basically like a Slim Jim.
I think the important thing is that any ladies out there who have slept with a Crypt Keeper need to write in and let us know what his junk is like firsthand. We need a primary source on this.
Or fellas.
Sure. We don't know.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No judgments, man.
Yeah. We're pro.
This is science.
Crypt Keeper marriage.
Or not marriage. Maybe just
whatever. Just having fun.
Just a fun night. Just, you want to be able to tell your friends.
Just two corpses.
You got it on with the Crypt Keeper.
Just doing what your corpse wants to do.
Just doing what your body wants.
Yeah. So I hope that helps you.
I think that probably answered the question.
Yeah, I think that's 100%. What they want.
It would be
to
great to sleep with the Crypt Keeper to get the pun when he's finished. That'd make it all worthwhile.
I thought I'd give a dog a bone.
Oh, man.
Because it's an unattractive woman that he just slept with.
Oh.
Context is everything.
I don't know whether I'm coming or decomposing.
So this letter is from Lawrence, last name withheld. He writes,
of Arabia.
Dear Flopicanus Africanus, your name if you were a hominid fossil. So you guys have fairly
perfect
idiosyncratic you guys have fairly idiosyncratic taste in films. Elliot loves old terrible movies and doesn't seem to give a shit about quality so long as they're in black and white. That was a sick burn, and also the only explanation.
Luckily, he's not here to hear it.
Yeah,
and thus fucking cry, dude. So thanks.
Yeah. The only explanation of his love of the old dark house. Now I gotta say, in the absence of Elliot, I watched the old dark house. I like the old dark house. Dan apparently just loves legitimately awesome movies. Hey, Dan, Miss 45 just got the Draft House treatment. Also, I love you as much as one straight dude can love another. Well, thank you, Lawrence. Last name withheld. And Stuart seems to go for tits, gore, and despair. I ran a MATLAB simulation. It is literally the only criterion that includes Head of the Family and Beyond the Pines. So, what movie review sites do you guys legitimately trust? For me, it's 1000misspenthours.com, which may not be amazing, but strangely syncs with my tastes. But I'd love to know where you guys go to pick movies. Yours, Lawrence, last name withheld. I mean, I think we've all talked about our enjoyment of The Dissolve.
Yeah, so I mean, I think we can all agree on that one.
Obvious pick.
For horror movies, I make an effort to check out The Arrow in the Head, which is a Canadian horror movie review site, and it's been going for a really long time. I don't always agree with the reviews, but I mean, he does break down whether or not there's a lot of gore or TNA, so that's the important part. I need to know what is going to be in Wishmaster 3 before I watch it.
Yeah.
Kevin?
Oh, I like The Dissolve a lot. I'll use a site called DailyGrindhouse.com.
Okay.
They got a lot of good reviews up there and keep me current with what's new, what's coming out, what I'm not going to be able to see for a long, long time because it's rare that I get a chance to watch a drive-in type Grindhouse movie at home.
Like, kids, it's 7 o'clock, time for bed. I got to
hear everything. It's a small Brooklyn apartment.
You can't put on like.
I had to turn off Psychomania. The music was too scary. Scary Sorry. Music.
You gotta get some of those headphones.
When it comes to critics, I don't know. I like David Edelstein of New York Magazine. I don't necessarily always agree with her, but I find Stephanie Zakariak interesting to read. I don't even know whether I'm saying her last name right, but. I think that she has a unique take on movies. I like critics who have kind of a idiosyncratic sense of taste. Like I don't know. Like I feel like the worst critics are the ones who are 100% in line with kind of the conventional wisdom all the time.
Yeah.
Like
you prefer more of an Armand White sort of thing.
I don't want to troll. Glenn Kenny is always interesting. People who
Bill Gabbieri at Vulture, he's like that.
Yeah,
he's,
yeah. He's, people who's like someone who like you can tell has an intelligent and specific point of view. They're fun to read, even if you don't always agree. I hope that answers your question somewhat. But the last letter of the night is from Patrick, last name withheld, who writes.
Recently, Patchy the dinosaur?
Yep. He says, recently I fell asleep while re-listening to the Star Wars Episode 2 podcast. Not a judgment on you wonderful guys. I sometimes listen to podcasts when I'm feeling panicky at night. Because of this, I had a very strange dream about Elliot. The dream was that Elliot was the size of a Star Wars figurine, and he requested that I place him in the cockpit of various Star Wars vehicle models. When I complied, he would make Star Wars noises while pretending to pilot the ship, then eventually request that he be moved to another model to do the same thing again. He pretended to do this inside an X-Wing, a TIE Fighter, and the Millennium Falcon. I do not know what this dream means exactly, but I was glad I could help Dream Elliot achieve his goals. Sincerely, Patrick, last name withheld.
In the comedy sketch version of this, the letter ends with, and when I woke up, I was covered with chafe marks all over my penis. I had an inverted Hasbro imprint on the head of my penis. What does it mean?
I've been fucking the Millennium Falcon.
I'm not saying this guy did this. I'm saying in the absurd... you know, in the tradition of I dreamt I was eating a giant marshmallow kind of bazooka joke. Yeah.
Sure.
I feel like this
somebody does a flip take at this point.
Suffers the most from Elliot unexpectedly
I think if Elliot was any Star Wars figure, he'd probably be an Ugnaught.
You think so?
And I could be a Gamorrean.
I think it would be the power droid.
Me? Or he would?
He would be.
Okay, like I thought you were going to say I was going to be the Rancor like Keeper, and I'd say that's okay. I'll allow
like
it.
Like a squat square. Just like a squat square with like little rubber legs.
I remember when I was a kid, somebody got me the power droid for one of my birthdays, and yeah, he was like, really, he was like, no, it's an awesome droid. It's called the power droid. It means it's the most powerful.
You remember him for those 3 seconds in the movie, just kind of walking down the hall.
I thought that was the droid that they flipped over and roasted his feet.
You gotta wonder, like,
oh yeah.
I assume that the power droid is basically just like a battery that moves around that they use to charge other things. Like, why do they give this battery droid like legs? Why couldn't they just like put him on wheels?
Like, don't they put drinks on his head?
I don't know.
They do that to R2-D2?
Yeah.
So they're coasters. They're mobile coasters.
But R2-D2's basically got wheels. The power droid walks. That's a terrible idea. He's going to knock those fucking drinks all over the place.
He's better for a bowl stemware of cocktail peanuts.
Yes.
Or that weird and you fishy
can,
thing.
He'll fucking walk over. You can get your drink, plug your fucking cell phone into him, etc.
Nice. Kindle.
Yep. Plug in your Kindle. Like, yeah, whatever, job. I got to check my screens. Oh, yeah, dinosaur. Sure, whatever.
So,
Prey dragons.
That's all for letters for this episode. And now your last and least favorite segment of the show, recommendations.
Oh, okay.
Movies that we saw recently that we actually liked. In lieu of replace Walking with Dinosaurs.
Yeah, so don't watch Walking with Dinosaurs. Watch the movie Dan's about to recommend.
Oh, I'm gonna go first. Here's the thing. I've got
hey there guys.
I've got three recommendations.
Let's do some real talk.
But they're linked. I've got three recommendations.
Okay.
I recently rewatched the Tim Burton Sweeney Todd.
Okay.
Which I enjoyed a great deal. I know that people who are real Sweeney Todd aficionados don't love that movie because, number one, a lot of stuff is cut from it. And number two, you know, you've got Johnny Depp and Helena Bonham Carter who are not real musical theater voices who maybe can't handle the Stephen Sondheim music as well as people who are real Broadway stars. But as a movie adaptation of a musical, it's one of the better musical films that have come out, certainly in like the last, you know, couple decades, which has been a kind of a dry spot for musical theater on film. However, that made me curious to go watch the Angela Lansbury production that is available on DVD. And that production is, you know, like a film stage production. It has Angela Lansbury from the...
she plays Sweeney Todd?
She's Mrs. It's Lovett.
Weird casting.
I believe that she's from the original cast. I may be wrong on this. But Sweeney Todd is not from the original cast. Like the capturing of this stage production does not capture the full original cast of that production. So it's maybe... in and of itself, not like the greatest record of the stage version. But she's great. And if you're wanting to see a complete version of the musical, it's certainly great. It has kind of the problems that you usually have when you watch a filmed version of a stage production. It just doesn't capture the full magic of it. But if you're interested, it's certainly great. And it's kind of interesting to watch, you know, the Tim Burton Sweeney Todd and watch that and think about how, like, that's kind of the way that theater is. Like, there's no one definitive version of a theatrical production. And likewise, there's no now, like, really definitive good Sweeney Todd you can get on DVD necessarily.
That Tim Burton one.
Okay, good point. But the third linked recommendation I want to make,
Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes,
is the great performances of Into the Woods, which is, I believe, the original Broadway cast of Into the Woods that has Bernadette Peters and Joanna Gleason. And that is one of the few cases where I actually do watch a filmed version of a stage play and think, this is great.
Yeah.
I'm totally entertained by everything that's happening here. So I guess what I'm saying is, if you want to watch a Sondheim musical, why not go check out, above all, the Into the Woods DVD. But also the Sweeney Todd ones are pretty good, too. So those are my recommendations.
Three big recommendations, all to be watched on airplanes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, thanks.
I'm going to... So I've seen a bunch of movies this summer. I've seen a lot of big movies. But the movie I'm going to recommend tonight is a little quiet movie called Drinking Buddies. It's directed by Joe Swanberg, who's part of that whole little crew of mumblecore horror directors. And
not just mumblecore horror,
but he's done a lot of like mumblecore horror, like that group of dudes made like Ty West and all those guys.
Sure.
So this is a little movie, not very much happens. It features Jake Johnson, is that his name, from The New Girl?
Or is it Jake Johansson?
I think it's Jake Johnson.
Okay.
One of them.
He's good, though.
Olivia Wilde, who's great in it.
I've always said that I kind of think that she's a good actress who's been stuck in shitty roles.
Yeah, that's true. And what's her name? The singer from whatever. So it's a great little movie. I liked it. It was a pretty good little movie. And yeah, so not much happens. It's about
drinking and buddies.
Yeah, it's about two friends who are in relationships with other people, and they obviously have chemistry, but for whatever, you know, for their own fears or societal pressures, they end up not getting together. But you know, their friendship in a way kind of hurts their individual relationships they have with other people. And it felt fairly honest to me, although not much happens. So don't watch this movie expecting a comedy like all the people on Amazon seem to, if you read the reviews.
All right. Kevin, what do you have to recommend?
Well, if you want something to counter Walking with Dinosaurs, you know, for parents out there, I really think the first Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs is terrific.
Oh, yeah.
It's got a lot of great stuff for kids, but adults too. It's just such a smart, fast, funny movie. Really terrific. So you can show that with the kids, and that's not going to be torture for you.
Those
it's
are
actually,
the guys who like went on to do like 21 Jump Street, the Lego movie.
Yeah. And I think that's probably some of their best work is in Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. And then, you know, full disclosure, Justin Long, Vassar grad, he and I did theater plays together. We did
really?
Sam Shepard play together. We did True West. We played the brothers.
Really?
In college.
Holy, so you would have known him fairly
I knew him,
well.
And I ran into him after my at when I was doing all my social media against Walking with Dinosaurs. I ran into him and I was like, "Do I say nope? Not gonna bring it up. Just gonna catch up and say hey, see how he's doing, and not say, oh, by the way, I've devoted a portion of my life to trashing that thing where you got a really nice paycheck to just ad lib while you're.
I gotta say, like, there's like screen. A weird. There's a weird like portion of the internet who has their guns out for Justin Long in the same way that I feel like there's a weird portion
I think
of
that's totally unfair.
Internet
he's so
who,
talented.
Like,
he's incredible. He's,
yeah,
he's,
no, I agree
he's,
with you.
He makes a lot of projects where he makes a lot of money, Alvin with the Chipmunks and a lot of the live action things, but the fact is he's super talented.
No, I think in The Right Thing, he can be very funny.
Oh, he's terrific.
He's in The Right Thing?
Yeah, he's in The Right Thing. Yeah, but like, I liked him in Walk Hard. I liked him in... Like the movie's not great, but I think he carries like accepted like as much as that movie.
That's a movie that you came up with that idea, and then they.
Well, that was an old Saturday Night Live skit with Billy Crystal.
Was it?
Where
oh man,
they had the fake college, and they describe on visiting day there will be a large cardboard cutout building that you can take your photo in front of, but don't let anyone stand behind it. Yeah, that idea has been around for
awesome.
A while.
Yeah, Justin Long, I think he's okay. Like, I feel like he tries to bring something, except for this movie where he didn't bring anything.
Well, he brought what he could. No one's
gonna, yeah, no, I
like
guess that no one's going to salvage
it,
sure.
This movie.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to like...
Producers of Walking with Dinosaurs, no one was going to fix your movie.
So if you want a good Vassar-grad movie as an alternative to this, I'd say check out Detonator, an indie film starring Ben Fine, class of 98, I believe. It's an indie movie about a washed-up punk rock singer who's at a crossroads in his life. And I think it's very enjoyable. And you can see it, you know, on demand in various iTunes and other formats.
Cool for Vassar grads.
Yeah.
Not me.
And then if you just want a good movie, I finally saw An Unmarried Woman. It took Paul Mazursky's death to get me to finally see An Unmarried Woman. It's fantastic.
So great. I'm the only one with only not three recommendations.
Yeah. Don't you feel
see Guardians of the Galaxy twice then, I guess.
Yeah. They already have.
Probably, yeah, according to numbers.
Well, guys, this has been good. Thanks for being here. Thanks for
being you, bro.
Thanks for being like this a fucking precog, nice, knowing geez. That Elliot was not going to be here.
In a way, is this like putting a pin in this part of your life?
I hope so. Yeah. That's the only way I can make sense of this. Because it was the longest, for my kids, it was the longest joke about how we would do all these jokes about me being in a Manchurian candidate style situation. I get hypnotized and they say, "You will betray your country." I'm going to say, "Yes, master." "You will kill your family members." I say, "Yes, master." "You will watch Walking with Dinosaurs again." "No!" Like, it was always the joke, I'm chained to a wall. We came up with all these great gags because my kids love needling me about Walking with Dinosaurs. And now, here, I actually saw it again, and it was just as terrible as I remember. Yeah. So the only good thing to come out of it is that this is the end. We've poured some holy water over the TV set.
Bury
it with Freddy Krueger's bones and John Saxon in the graveyard.
He'll never come back ever.
No. That's probably it. Not a good
comparison. Why do they bury him with his sweater?
Well, we're going to have to say goodnight. But for the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
I've been Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Kevin Marr at Kevin Geeks Out on Twitter. That's Kevin Geeks Out on Twitter.
That's a good plug.
Yeah. Good night, everyone.
Man, we are going to set the night on fire.
Because we are not that young anymore.
Yep. You're going to hear me roar.
Let's do this shit.
Yeah, let's fuck this up. Let's fucking tear the new one.
Fucking
do a new it. Fucking let's thing.
In
dinosaurs.
3, 2.
Dinosaurs.